From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, we're going to spend the hour talking about how the pandemic forced us to look at our personal relationships in a new light, for better and for worse.
I learned that some of the friendships I thought I had were maybe not as close as I thought they were.
Families, friend circles, romantic relationships all felt new pressures in isolation.
One of the biggest problems that people are experiencing is a loss of control. And specifically within romantic relationships, I found that they're struggling with this idea of a lack of boundaries.
Are there ways we can repair these relationships or learn how to navigate the ways in which they've changed because of COVID?
Experiencing something big together, something, you know, new and novel, can really draw couples together.
That conversation coming up on this hour of Stateside. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. This week, and probably next, we're talking about the things in our lives that have been fundamentally changed by a year of forced recalibration, and maybe also some things that should change. Maybe there are aspects of your life that you have realized are stuck or getting worse with pandemic isolation.
There have been some times, some arguments that we've had that probably were more passionate than our arguments had ever been before.
Dating life in COVID has been challenging, to say the least. It's difficult to establish the trust that you would need to put not just your like emotional self on the table, but now also your actual like physical health.
And that brings us to today's show. We're going to spend this hour talking about the most personal side of the pandemic, our relationships, our thoughts and feelings, and our mental health. Most of us have had some sort of bubble through the course of this, a small group of people we continued seeing while the novel virus spread along the masses. That could be family members that we already live with. For others, it was a few select friends we gathered with. Often we call them our pods. So what happened over a year of being cut off from a larger, more interactive group of humans? Do families draw nearer? Do romantic relationships fall apart? Pods or bubbles of friends become stale or show signs of fatigue? With us today are Amy Gordon, assistant professor of psychology at the University of Michigan and director of the Wellbeing, Health, and Interpersonal Relationships Lab. Hi, Amy.
Hi, happy to be here.
And also, back with us, Napoleon Harrington, licensed professional counselor with Ambassador Counseling and Resource Group in Southfield. Hey, Napoleon, how are you?
I'm glad to be here.
So, did you feel like your jobs prepared you in any way to deal with the stress of this moment, or are you both feeling as lost as the rest of us?
Perhaps more so, given that I, you know, should have the background to know how to handle all this, and yet, you know, still juggling, working at home, kids at home, all of that.
Napoleon, how about you?
Yeah, well, I feel like my job is to walk with people through pain and suffering. One of the contexts I never paid attention to was an actual pandemic and that kind of situation. So pain and suffering, I got down pat, but the pandemic piece is tough.
Yeah. How are you both doing?
I feel like I'm one of the lucky ones who's been able to keep my job, actually change jobs, move to Michigan in the midst of a pandemic. And you know, have probably grown closer with my family. My daughter's heading back to school a little bit next month, and I think I'll miss her when I go. So in that way, I feel like I have, you know, had people around me be safe and all of that, and very grateful for riding this out in a relatively, you know, safe bubble.
Napoleon, have you gotten to the point where you can see the light at the end of the tunnel?
I see a light. I just don't know if it's the end of the tunnel. I feel a lot like Amy. I'm grateful that I've been able to have some opportunities to have extra time with family. Just this past February in 2020, I had my wife and I had twin girls. And so I've been able to be home with them. And so it's been a blessing that way for me. But it is also tough in terms of the work piece.
Oh my gosh. Like trying to keep the intimate experience with the folks that you're helping out when there's baby stuff going on double time in the background. I cannot even imagine.
Well, it's ironic. I've come to session a time or two with a pamper in my hand and forgot what I was doing with it.
Well, the pandemic has probably impacted all of our relationships in some way, whether it's in a very large way or a small, subtle one. I wanted to start out with romantic relationships. Amy, I know you've been sort of surveying couples throughout the pandemic. What were you hoping to learn?
You know, our study really was prompted by early reports when China started to open back up. And there was an article that a colleague saw in which divorce, you know, a bunch of people got out of their homes and apparently rushed to request divorces. And, you know, this was right at the beginning of the pandemic. And I was in the midst of just trying to survive us all being stuck in a small house together unexpectedly. But I couldn't help myself. You know, we quickly put together a study to try to understand sort of a couple things. So one major one is just where some of my research looks at stress in couples and when both partners are experiencing stress, how they navigate that. So wanting to understand this incredibly stressful situation and what that looked like for couples. And then the other one was just hoping over time to see what predicted, you know, which couples thrived and which did not. And so we designed this as a 6-month study. We launched it at the end of April. And the goal was, you know, in November, when everything's back to normal, we'll follow up with them and see what happened. Well, so we are, you know, a year out and we are still collecting data because it's still not over.
Could you give us a brief snapshot of what you found?
Yeah, so we haven't, because it's ongoing, we haven't done a lot of data collection, but one of, you know, the stark things that is standing out is we have, you know, at every time point, we've been surveying couples about every 3 months since April, and at every time point, we find that over half of them report, you know, that they, the best way to describe the past week is that they are both experiencing stress. But we also saw, you know, early on, we asked people what had changed in their relationship since the pandemic began. And interestingly, we found that, you know, over half of the people we asked said that their relationship satisfaction was higher. But at the same time, half of them also said they were more irritated with their partners. And they are spending more quality time together, but also, you know, experiencing co-parenting difficulties, fights and arguments. So interesting to sort of see this was particularly couples who are sheltering in place together and how sort of that being with each other all the time brings out maybe the best and the worst.
Napoleon, will you tell us what you're hearing from the folks you work with about this?
One of the most common things that I'm hearing is that COVID has created people to relinquish some sense of control that they used to have in their lives. And that's been a problem from day to day for people. Normally, you were in command of your where you went, how you went, and what condition you were when you got there. And at this point, people's existences have been simply just rearranged. And so one of the biggest problems that people are experiencing is a loss of control. And specifically within romantic relationships, I found that they're struggling with this idea of a lack of boundaries, not being able to be connected in a way that gives each other the kind of space that they need and can respect from each other. That's been a very difficult situation because normally that boundary could have been very easily drawn up because of your schedule or what have you. But now, since we're in each other's space with each other very often, the boundaries kind of spill over. And so sometimes the demands and expectations start to rise through the roof. So lack of boundaries, loss of control, those are some of the things that I'm hearing most consistently.
Do boundary issues, is that always about the time that people spend with each other or the physical boundaries? Or can it have more to do with just the emotional space that couples occupy in each other's lives?
It's a bit of both. It's about time and it's about proximics as well. The actual physical space that someone could be consistently in over and over again, that creates a problem. And of course, the time creates an issue as well.
Yeah. There have been a lot of people who found themselves really getting closer to their partners in this moment. I want to play a clip now from a listener named Arthur in Grand Rapids. Let's hear what he said.
Both of us, we have various anxieties, and COVID certainly didn't, you know, help any of them. They alternatively made them worse. And almost having that person next to you and sort of knowing you've got someone to take this daunting pandemic on with was very helpful. And I think we kind of bolstered each other.
Napoleon, hearing what Arthur said, is there anything that stands out to you there?
the idea of togetherness and his willingness to identify it as a strength as opposed to maybe a boundary being overstepped. It's being able to support a person through something as significant as a pandemic. Someone being there for someone else is, we're driven by connection, and people love to stay connected relationally. And just his statement about being there together really stands out for me.
Amy, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I just think about such a basic social psychological experience, like Napoleon's talking about, that experiencing something big together, something, you know, new and novel, can really draw couples together. And so even when that might be itself sort of a larger negative experience, it can create a sense of team and closeness that has really beneficial effects for the couples.
In a minute, we'll continue our conversation with Amy Gordon and Napoleon Harrington. But first, let's hear a little more from people about what this time has meant for their relationships and their lives.
My name is Susan Brondike. I know that so many people have been feeling lonely and disconnected from others, but my story is really about the unique opportunities caused by this crazy time we've been living in. I live in an older neighborhood in Grand Rapids. My neighbor Mary's house is so close that I can literally see in her dining room and kitchen every time I stand at my kitchen sink. Mary and I are what I would consider good neighbors. We chit-chat occasionally on the sidewalk about the weather or the park across the street. We sometimes help one another with things like shoveling or mowing. But I don't really know her, and that's what's changed during the pandemic. In November, my husband and I both came down with COVID, and when Mary found out, she offered to help, asking us if we needed anything from the store. That's what began the texting. It started with simple questions about how we were feeling, and then moved on to the cool birds at our back feeder. Through all these texts, I began discovering things about Mary, like the fact that she's a really accomplished artist. This sparked multiple days of back and forth about her subjects, techniques, easels, and the like. And over the past few months, we've discussed everything from stories about our families to the political highs and lows of the day. Through it all, I've learned that Mary has a heart for social justice and a wicked sense of humor. I really believe this isolated togetherness has forever changed our relationship, all over text. And now when I see her through the kitchen window, I feel connected in a new and better way that might not have happened if it hadn't been for the pandemic.
This is Stateside. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Chris Campbell from Ypsilanti Township. And my COVID or pandemic bubble is made up of myself, my husband, my newly minted 9-year-old son and 5-year-old daughter. And before March 16th, he worked an hour and a half away. I worked doing a lot of community work, which required, you know, evening meetings out in the community. It required that I work in an office during the daytime. And so we spent a lot of time away from each other, and we have been in each other's faces for the last, you know, 52 weeks, both kids, husband and wife, nonstop from the beginning of the day to the end, you know, until it's time to put our heads down on the pillow. And so it's, you know, they say familiarity breeds contempt. There have been some contemptuous moments. There have been some times, some arguments that we've had that probably were more passionate than our arguments had ever been before. But that's okay, because we came back from them and we came back much stronger, I think, than we would have been if we were not having to be around each other all the time. We've really found a new way to live. We really have.
This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. We're talking today about how our relationships have changed during the pandemic, where they've gotten stronger, how they've frayed, and what we can do about it. With me today are Amy Gordon, an assistant professor of psychology at the University of Michigan. She's also director of the Wellbeing, Health, and Interpersonal Relationships Lab. And we also have Napoleon Harrington here, a licensed professional counselor with Ambassador Counseling and Resource Group in Southfield. We got another response from a listener named Chelsea on Instagram, who said that the pandemic, and I'm quoting here, helped me realize that I need more space and time alone from my boyfriend. And she says they live together. Do either of you have some advice about how couples can carve out their own time and space when maybe both of those are in very limited supply?
I think it's important to schedule some time when I can have my time and you can have yours. And negotiations with that time makes for a greater way to decide how we're going to give each other some space. So that physical and psychological boundary that's put up will certainly give the other person the idea that they do respect my time, they do respect my space. And so because of the negotiation, I think it works best for partners that way.
Amy, how about you?
So, yeah, just echoing what Napoleon was saying earlier about boundaries, I came across a really interesting recent study looking at how couples were handling the pandemic. And one thing that came out in it was people feeling like their sort of goals or schedule was thwarted by their partner. So that idea then that you're sort of around each other and your partner can walk in and when you're in the middle of work and distract you, or you think you're going to get something done in the day, but you have to negotiate that with someone else. And that I think in that way, it can feel like you're never alone a little bit when you have somebody who can interrupt or come in and change what you thought you were going to do or how you thought things were going to go. And in this research, they found that was difficult in couples, that feeling of sort of being thwarted by a partner. So I imagine that plays a little bit into this feeling of not having space. In the research, having sort of clear expectations and communicating with each other, I think is something that will be very helpful, making sure, you know, partners both sort of know what you need and what you expect from them. Because sometimes, you know, we're not mind readers, but we think the other person gets, you know, what's happening, but it's often really hard for us to get into the other person's head and realize when they're working, they need their space. And, you know, setting up things like closed versus open doors and sort of practical solutions for carving out a little bit of space in the day. And also recognizing that a lot of people lost some outside support or relationships that gave them, you know, something outside of that. And so we're relying often a lot more, I think, on the people in our bubbles in a way that we might not have previously. And that changes also sort of our expectations for each other.
Are we living through a time when something is fundamentally changing about relationships, or is this maybe just putting a magnifying glass on whatever's there for better and for worse? Napoleon, why don't you go first and then we'll go to Amy.
Well, I think that things are fundamentally changing, and the microscope is also being placed on what's happening in our society and what's been happening. One of the most common phrases I've been hearing over the course of this year and some time is, I never realized. And when I hear people mention, I never realized, there's some awareness or some heightened sensitivity to what they have been doing or what they have not been doing. And some sense of acknowledgement of needing to change life. So people are gaining a lot of insight with regard to the way they want to live their life and how they choose to live their life, and starting to make motivation in a positive direction in a lot of ways. But I do have the impression that with the advent of technology and the increased use of it, fundamentally it is changing and helping to create a paradox of progress with mobile devices and other things that we're using. I know that I've read something not too long ago that said that we touch, handle, and hold our mobile devices more than we touch, handle, and hold the people that we love. And I think with the advent of social media and all of these other mediums, we are finding ourselves connected, but yet still struggling with how to maintain that physical in-person connection. So fundamentally, I think things are changing and the microscope is definitely on us.
Amy, what do you think?
You know, I've really thought of this, and I think there are broader things that are changing, especially how we approach work, and that will probably have some spillover into our relationships long term. Just with a lot of companies realizing remote work works and what that means. But in terms of, you know, our everyday experiences of our relationships, you know, in research, they talk about, they have this, what they call this stress diathesis model, and this idea that we might have these sort of underlying conditions or, you know, predispositions that might never be exposed until we sort of face a stressor and it, you know, brings that out or turns it on. And so I think of the pandemic very much as doing that for people, sort of pulling out what maybe was previously dormant or could be sort of pushed under the rug, both good and bad.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Napoleon Harrington, a counselor with Ambassador Counseling and Resource Group in Southfield, and also Amy Gordon, assistant professor of psychology at the University of Michigan. I wanted to talk a little bit about dating. There has been a lot of focus on people who are already partnered up, but then there's this whole class of folks who are finding themselves single right now and trying to decide how and if to interact with other people. Napoleon, I'm wondering, what are you hearing from your clients who are trying to date right now? What kind of hurdles are they running into?
Wow, that's probably the million-dollar question. And I think most daters right now are very restless. Many of the conversations I'm having in session have everything to do with, I just am ready to go out and date. I need the connection. The most I'm hearing is about almost having to settle with the online platforms to make connections and things like that. And they're finding it to be the wide open West. And it's a challenge. The days of sitting down and meeting someone one-on-one is very slim. And of course, because of the pandemic, face-to-face interactions from people that you're not familiar with creates or poses a problem. So dating right now has a unique strain on it, but it's not impossible. So most of what I'm hearing is folks are restless and dating apps are increasing.
Amy, I heard the most interesting observation from someone who is single right now, that actually the offerings on the online dating platforms have radically changed, that there's so many more people using them than the introverts who typically might populate an online dating site. Does that track with what you're hearing?
It does, and it poses, you know, an interesting problem, because I've also, you know, anecdotally and from data seen, it seems like people are switching to that mode because what else can they do? But there's some issues with online dating in terms of sort of the vast pool of available partners can make it hard to commit to any one individual. So it depends on whether you're looking for a short-term or long-term partner and what your strategy is. But on the one hand, it's great, you know, more people available, more ways to find them. On the other hand, it can make it harder to commit to any individual because there's always someone else out there, right? When you see all these high quality potential partners. There's also some research that kind of brings into light some of the issues with online dating and encourages people to get offline as quickly as possible. And to actually meet in person. And of course, the pandemic is posing problems with that. So I'm really curious, you know, to see what comes out of this. Interestingly, anecdotally, I've heard some people who say they've actually found partners who had trouble before. And because, you know, people are at home not knowing what else to do, and they engage in these meaningful, you know, deep conversations with people that they meet online and eventually are able to bring it offline. But I also think, you know, the same sort of restlessness and issues with so many options out there, how do you ever pick and how do you actually get the connection in real life, are issues that are going to continue to come up until we can resume, you know, social normalcy in terms of meeting at bars.
Oh, go ahead, Napoleon, please.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say I totally agree, because there's a lot of people who are taking the time to have more meaningful conversations and asking questions that normally would take quite some time for them to ask. They are actually asking earlier, getting to know someone with more depth, and are finding that relationships have a lot more value to them when you have that much more conversation and communication in them. So I totally agree with Amy.
I have to just throw out there quickly, too, that apparently the number of non-romantic roommates who are engaging, you know, in behaviors to get that connection has gone up in unexpected ways. I recently saw data on that.
You mean like hooking up partner. Or just interacting as friends?
Data, yeah, there was a presentation at a conference with data on the number of non-romantic partners who, roommates who have hooked up. But yes, that was the bottom line, which I just found fascinating.
I want to. I'm wondering if there might be some good changes coming out of this for dating. Napoleon, I mean, safety, even emotional safety, is a huge issue for online dating already. Do you see this time having some lasting effects?
I actually do. My impression is that people are going to do a lot of more trust elevating techniques that will help them understand a person and develop a level of trust with them by asking questions and getting more into what the person is like, who they are. Just like the listener was saying, I think that that is a something that's going to stick around, primarily because when you're having to talk through really loaded issues and conversations and something like a pandemic, I've even heard people tell me, you know, I've been having the COVID talk with people if I'm trying to date. And the COVID talk used to be other conversations that we used to have. And so my impression is that the trust elevating techniques that people are using, they're paying more attention to what trust is and what it means to them and how they can actually create another meaningful relationship. So I do think it's going to stick around for a while.
Can I ask also about the people who live alone, maybe aren't dating during COVID because it just doesn't feel safe or just haven't found the right person yet? I really feel for people who are stuck in less ideal relationships, but also for those flying mm-hmm. solo. Amy, what do you hear from them?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot about this, that again, this pandemic has created, you know, this real split between people who suddenly find themselves constantly, you know, around the people that they're living with. And then you've got this whole other group who live alone and suddenly have no one in their daily life in the way that they might have before. And so I think, you know, that's the group that I do really worry about in terms of mental health. We know how, you know, sort of problematic and it can be to feel lonely and isolated. Social belonging is one of our deepest needs. And when we can't get that met, that can pose real problems for how we feel both mentally and physically. So I do really worry about that group. And I think, you know, especially for older people who are living alone that maybe aren't as comfortable with technology and able to get a little bit of that through, you know, Zoom or other virtual interactions, that isolation is going to have, you know, severe consequences. That is something a lot of people, you know, are paying attention to, but it's not an easy problem to fix, unfortunately.
So maybe we can reach out to them, give them a call and mm-hmm. say, hi, I'm thinking about you.
Yeah, my husband's taken to writing weekly letters to his grandfather. And I think little things like that, especially, you know, in mediums that they appreciate, can make a difference. And I do encourage that for people to reach out, especially so that person isn't always the one initiating contact. You know, I think it's hard when it always has to be you probably who's reaching out to people. So if you know someone who's alone and feeling lonely, checking in with them, I think, is a great, great small thing you can do.
In just a minute, we'll wrap up our conversation with Amy and Napoleon and hear from more Michiganders who spent time thinking about the ways in which their relationships have changed during the pandemic.
You have to almost be very selective who you let in and when you let them in and what the risk level would be.
But first, let's hear a little more from people about what this time has meant for the relationships in their lives.
Hi, I'm Jenny Kinney, and I live in Grand Rapids, and I am 30 years old and run a bookstore. I went through a pretty significant breakup during this pandemic. So I remember very clearly sitting by myself as all of the lockdowns were unfolding, single for one of the first times in my adult life, trying to sort through how I wanted to handle my own emotional chaos and sense of helplessness, but how to also like reach out to people and have hope that I could find a relationship, and feeling like I really wanted one, especially as the world felt like it was ending. I think it's really hard to decide when it's time to meet someone right now, and it's difficult to establish the trust that you would need to put not just your like emotional self on the table, but now also your actual like physical health and well-being. I've tried to make sure that I meet someone over a video call and spend time actually like interacting with that person in a way that gives me a deeper sense of their stories and values before we meet up, which is not exactly the way casual dating normally happens. I have been grateful that it's now more of a cultural norm to get to know someone better before meeting them. And I have been able to create, I think, deeper potential relationships in this space than I would if I were more frequently meeting up with people casually. So there are good things that balance out the challenge, but the challenges are still very real.
Stay with us. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. If there's one thing that we've learned during the past year, it's that it's really, really hard to do it all yourself. But you don't have to. We've been talking this hour with two people who specialize in helping folks with life's heavy lifts, especially during the pandemic. Joining me are Amy Gordon, assistant professor of psychology at the University of Michigan. She also directs the Well-Being, Health, and Interpersonal Relationships Lab. And Napoleon Harrington. He's a licensed professional counselor with Ambassador Counseling and Resource Group. Napoleon, is being single in a time like this necessarily a recipe for crisis?
Actually, it's not. And I read a unique article that basically suggested, please don't assume that I'm miserable because I'm alone. And I think that means it means something, that we make the assumption that people who may be living in solitude or with solitude, that they're miserable. And solitude is actually healthy. And there's a lot of folks who are making the most of this period of time that allows or encourages more solitude. It's the isolation that is more damaging and more concerning. So when people are isolating themselves, that's what we should be more worried about. But solitude is healthy. And I think it does help folks to reframe things in their life if they, prior to the pandemic, it helps them to put things in a better perspective. How many times have we said to ourselves, I wish I just had more time to think about this or focus on this? And this has given us a perfect segue to do just that.
Yeah. So I have to speak. What Napoleon said is so perfect, because we actually have some people interested in studying this at the university, of the difference between loneliness and solitude. And that's such a key distinction of whether it's something that you're choosing to be alone, you know, and enjoying that time and with yourself and maybe get involved in new activities or just, you know, enjoying the freedom to be you, versus feeling it imposed on you in a way that creates loneliness and a desire for connection that you're not able to satisfy.
May I ask what both of you have observed about what the pandemic has meant in the non-romantic space for friendships?
From the practical application standpoint in the office, what I've found is because the pandemic has created scenarios where limitations are involved in people interacting and engaging, you have to almost be very selective who you let in and when you let them in, and what the risk level would be in you know, letting them in. And so some of your high-risk folks, the people who they're willing to turn up at any time and go out and not be cognizant of the fact that there's a pandemic happening, those are people that usually are going to be on the outside and you don't necessarily let them in as close. And then those who are respecting, you know, all of the required CDC measures, those are the folks that you feel safer with coming in. And so we start to make judgments and assertions about what quality of friendships we have and what level of safety and what amount of risk are we willing to take given all of those situations. So the idea of friendships having some suffering, that it is very true. And I usually have had conversations with folks in session about, well, figure out who you've been texting the most and what that texting or calling or FaceTiming has been like for you. And if it's been healthy and if it's been nourishing, then do more of that. And if not, and it's just been doomsaying, then you probably want to reduce the amount of that conversation that you're having. So it's unique because we're focusing on the kinds of folks who are showing that they respect what's happening and also paying attention to the risk level that they place on us. So it becomes very important for us to pay attention to who we're bringing in close and who we're not. And friendships are determined based on that.
I would like to touch on a subject that I feel is very sensitive. As I mentioned, a lot of us are in pods. That is, groups of friends that we've agreed we're going to see these folks. If we have social gatherings, we're going to socialize with them, but we're not going to see other people. I wonder what's going on with people who might be wearing a little thin on their pod bubble. Have either of you heard from folks talking about this? Oh, don't everybody jump at once.
I haven't. I was thinking, following up on Napoleon, that, you know, it's definitely made us think about our relationships with people more so, right? Because they're not easy in the way they might have once been. And we have to be really cognizant, you know, and is this someone I want in my life? Is it worth the effort, you know, to go through the safety measures and see them? Or is it someone I want to see all the time if they're going to be moving into my pod? So I actually haven't heard people who are dissatisfied with their pods, but I can imagine that, you know, same with being in your home with people, where if you sort of spend way more time with someone than you might have previously, that brings out different things in your relationship, right? And there's also, friendships tend not to require a lot of negotiation the way that perhaps, you know, romantic relationships do. And but there's a lot more of that if you're working with, you know, each other on what you feel is safe and okay in today's world. So I think there's, you know, an extra layer to friendships that might not have existed as much in, you know, pre-pandemic.
Yeah, not to limit the question just to chosen family, I think pod fatigue is probably an issue that a lot of folks are dealing with their actual families too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something that I've noticed, we haven't been considering it a pandemic pod per se, but when you're in your that group that you chose, which of course is the pod, you might find out very quickly that that's not the group that you wanted to commit to. And now you're stuck for a little while and have to make a decision about how you interact with these folks, even within the family. Having to spend more time with family members that you didn't initially set out to spend can be really taxing emotionally, mentally, and even kind of contribute to the numbers that we're seeing related to the increase of anxiety, adjustment disorder, as well as depression. So because a lot of people, which really goes back to that conversation about boundaries, because those boundaries are being challenged and put in question often, people may not necessarily know what to do in terms of saying no and creating those limitations so that they stay healthy. And if pods experience the difficulty of boundaries being overrun, they will find themselves unpotting relatively quickly.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Napoleon Harrington, a counselor with Ambassador Counseling and Resource Group in Southfield, and also Amy Gordon, assistant professor of psychology at the University of Michigan. This time has tested a lot of bonds, and sometimes those bonds have been broken between people who used to be pretty close. I want to play an example of that from a listener real quick. Let's take a listen.
Hi, my name is Nate Sterling. I live in Muskegon, Michigan, and I'm an electrician. I have two children. Both of my children have medical conditions. One was born with several heart defects, and our pediatric cardiologist really made it clear that this was serious from the get-go. It's been very difficult. We have family who has very much chosen their politics over the health and well-being of my children, and like I'm not exactly going to be forgiving and forgetting that anytime soon as we move forward.
So, I mean, I think what he's talking about is that there are family members who are not sticking to COVID protocols, and he just feels really, really hurt by this and is not feeling like this is a short-term situation with the family members who made those decisions. How hard do you think it will be to move forward from some of the very real conflicts that have come up right now? Napoleon, would you like to go first on this?
Yeah, I thank you for that, because I spent a lot of time researching this with the American Mental Health Counselors Association, and we put out a paper called Beyond the Perfect Storm, which basically is all about making sure that we pay attention to the multiple layers of crises that were happening throughout the pandemic and how it is affecting households and what kind of households, what kind of things households can do in order to maintain relationships. There are a lot of folks who have been experiencing some levels of pain, frustration, and suffering behind the way that their family or even their pod has reacted to a variety of these different conversations. And I think that the more people are able to open up and have discussions about where they are mentally and emotionally, and make some decisions about how they want to engage moving forward, I think if they're willing to put that conversation in front of them and hopefully with the person that they need to, they can find some peace and solace in the time that they're in.
Mm-hmm. Amy, do you have anything to add?
It just, that clip made me really think about the importance of feeling, you know, heard, seen, understood in relationships. And I think this pandemic has brought the lack of feeling understood out when, you know, people not just don't understand why someone else isn't being safe, but why they can't do that for them or their children, you know, what, and so I think, you know, what this will mean long term is a reflection on those relationships as well. Is this a relationship that people are committed to? Is this a parent that you're going to work through to get past that, that you're going to try to get past that hurt? Or is this, you know, a more distant family member that might get let go because it's, you know, not worth the effort if you feel like they don't sort of see and validate your concerns? So I don't know what'll come of this, and it'll be interesting, but I think, you know, it tracks sort of classic conflict in relationships, right? It's bringing out things that perhaps families didn't have to deal with in the same way that more interdependent couples, like romantic couples, have to face on a more frequent basis. And so it's bringing up conflict in a new way, but sort of with the same underlying issues.
I wonder, there's so many things that we all aspired to during the course of the pandemic. I said I was absolutely going to spend more time outside. That has not turned out to be the case. I said I absolutely was going to write more letters since I was going to be home so much. That has not turned out to be the case. Can I ask both of you, is there a piece of your own advice that you wish you had taken during this time but didn't quite happen?
That's an interesting question for me. I think the advice that I gave myself was to slow down and appreciate the time that I had. But I think with the presence of twins coming into our lives on February 19th, 2020, peace was kind of far-fetched because a lot of activity had to happen in order to take care of those little ladies. So I think slowing down is something that I'm still certainly working on doing. And if I were to give anybody advice, I would give it to them very humbly, because I'm still working on it myself, that slowing down is a really important thing to do now, especially in light of the times. Because when you slow down, you get to understand a lot more about where you are. You can begin to be more bold, take risks, live life more freely. And you find the courage to do things that you never really found before. So I would encourage slowing down.
Yeah, Napoleon, I know this is perverse of me to say, but I so envy you having babies in the house right now. I kind of wish I had. Amy, how about you? What's a piece of advice that you wish you'd taken?
Yeah, I mean, April, what you said, it just highlights All we know about how hard it is to change people's habits and actually get them to stick with that change. So it's interesting to reflect. For me, similar to Napoleon, it's you know, recognizing at the beginning that I needed to lower my expectations, that it, how could I, you know, have a 7-year-old doing school at home and, you know, do my first year as a professor at the same sort of level I would have in a non-pandemic world. But I think it's been hard for me to actually lower those expectations and not feel somehow like I should be doing it all. And so it's great to get reminders from friends when I, you know, grumble about something that, like, there's still a pandemic going on, right? And I think that is part of it too, how quickly we can adjust. Even as we don't adjust, in some ways we do adjust to a new normal, and we sort of fall into that where now, well, this is life. I should be doing it at the same level. I should be feeling good at the same level that, you know, I always used to feel. And so reminding ourselves or having outside people remind us that, no, it's not. Like, this is still a very different life than the one, you know, we thought we'd be having at this point. And that, you know, we have to...
Are we letting ourselves off the hook?
A little bit. We need... I mean, I think... lowering our expectations, but striving, you know, is good. And that's the advice that I tend to give myself.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for being here. It's really been a pleasure talking to you about the many, many, many things going on right now in our lives and in our hearts. Amy Gordon is an assistant professor of psychology and also lab director for the Wellbeing, Health, and Interpersonal Relations Lab at the University of Michigan. And Napoleon Harrington is with Ambassador Counseling and Resource Group in Southfield. Napoleon, Amy, thank you so much for taking some time with us.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Christy. I am from Washington, Michigan. I learned that some of the friendships I thought I had were maybe not as close as I thought they were. And I do try to be easy on some of that because obviously everybody was going through, you know, mental stuff during this. It's really taxing to not see people, financial scares, all of that stuff. But I did get a lot closer with some friends that I was actually distant with before.
Hi, I'm Arthur Jones. I have a good friend who I, before the pandemic, played in a band with. In Lansing, and lately we just send each other, you know, Spotify links with bands and such and talk about it, and we'll send each other songs we wrote, and so we've been able to really communicate through the medium of music and sort of this common interest between us.
I've got a group of girlfriends. We've been friends since college, so we're looking at, you know, 20 plus years of friendship, and we're spread out all over the country. And I would say for the first 4 months of the pandemic, we met regularly every Friday night at 9 p.m. using the Facebook Messenger video phone app. It was really awesome. In fact, I probably need to call them and remind them that we've got to get back to our 9 o'clock meetings. Was really just a great way to blow off some steam from the week.
My name is Christine, and I'm based in Ferndale in Southeast Michigan.
My name is Callum, and I'm also based in Ferndale. Yeah, I feel like I've missed kind of getting to meet new people and having just moved to Michigan and then COVID hit. It's been kind of rough not being able to, you know, meet people outside of work, which is, I think, where a lot of bonding takes place.
Something I've realized is that we make pretty good friends. Like, I have fun hanging out with you and, like, scream singing Sinead O'Connor in the living room and just generally hanging out.
That's Stateside for today. Our producers are Aaron Allen, Mike Blank, April Van Buren, and Mercedes Mejia, led by our executive producer, Laura Weber-Davis. They are, if I may say, the best team in the business. Stateside is a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm April Baer. I'm going to be gone for a few weeks. I'll see you when I get back.